There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
So you guys are aware of the fact that the Illuminati, and I'm calling Illuminati because they've been bad.
I got that.
Yeah.
my goodness.
They make clones using discarded foreskins.
I didn't know
Did
that.
Did you know that?
I was actually vaguely aware of that.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that what happened to Dan Aykroyd's face?
I guess you do it's roast rough. The ones you love, yes.
All right, everyone. Welcome to the last podcast. On the left, I am Ben Kissel, Marcus Parks.
Hey, Ben.
Hello, and Henry Zabrowski, wearing fully clothed in Los Angeles.
I got close today. There was a bit of a nip in there, so I decided not to share the world to my nips.
It is a fall day. We are talking.
It's 72 degrees set in my apartment. I've made it cold in here. It's 95 degrees outside.
Oh, wow. Look at that. It's 61 here in New York. That's the weather update for the last podcast on the left. We'll go to our helicopter, Eye in the Sky, coming up here later on in the show.
It's all on fire.
Speaking of everything on fire, Robert Picton, part three. It's all about to fall apart.
My God, this
my
is
goodness.
About to get intense. In 1995, Willie had a victim of his found for the very first time. Mm-hmm. She was never identified, but by the time this Jane Doe was found, it's probable that Willie had killed up to 20 women.
Mm. I know that it's based off of a John Doe, but just for once, if you had an unidentified victim, can't you call it like a Veronica Doe?
Yeah.
An Anastasia Doe.
Ooh, that would be nice. Heather Doe, the prettiest gal to ever come from Wisconsin. She looks like her name.
Then she's promptly was murdered.
Oh, it's poor Heather Doe.
So on February 23rd, 1999, a roadside birdhouse and whirligig salesman named Bill Wilson walked down to a Canadian swamp to fetch a bucket of water to wash off his car.
Henry, this guy, you can just see the sweat on his brow, just like, no one's buying whirligigs anymore. What the hell am I supposed to do?
AC's broken in the car. I got the whirligigs going, trying to kick up a breeze. But what can you say? I got all this pig shit everywhere, and it wasn't even from this pig farm. It was from my home, so I better just pull over to the side of the fucking road for some reason and go to a random creek.
Wash off in the swamp.
But instead of just plain old swamp water, Bill found half a human skull sitting on a bed of rocks. Mm. Now, while most of us would immediately find a police officer, Bill Watson took the Canadian path instead and said he'd get around to it after he'd gone to his doctor's appointment and did his afternoon shopping.
Okay.
But by the time he'd done all that, it was time for bingo night. And anyway, he didn't have
a phone. You can't miss bingo night. They gotta have you there. Because what are they gonna do without bingo night without the whirligigs?
Exactly. Whirligigs guy gotta show up.
And anyway, he didn't have a phone at home, so he figured he'd sleep off all that shopping and bingo and go to the police station in the morning.
I know we're making fun of him, but I kinda like it.
Yes.
Like, I sort of like this guy.
Now, it took him until 5 o'clock p.m. the next day to amble his way over to a police station to report that he'd seen half a human fucking skull in a slough. You know, sure, the guy had a criminal record and didn't want to get involved, but still, it's half a skull. Mm. Phone in an anonymous tip from the fucking bingo hall.
Yeah.
It did make sense to me. Obviously, he had a criminal record, which is why he didn't want to immediately call the police. But the problem is, you still call the police.
Yeah.
Just don't call the police. It's like one or the other. Either just don't get involved at all, or just do it immediately so you don't look incredibly guilty for just carrying around a skull or been like, I've been knowing about a skull for the last 36 hours.
Right. So he didn't pick up the skull, though. He just left it there.
He just left it there. Yeah, he said at first, boy, you know, it looked like a brown bowl.
Makes sense, yeah.
But when he got closer, it was half a human skull.
Hmm.
So when cops finally got around to the skull, they found that it had been deliberately sliced in half from the back of the head to the front with a powerful saw.
Hmm.
They figured it had been done by someone familiar with bone slicing, but wasn't done by a medical professional as the cut lines were uneven.
Oh.
Hey, Bob, tell me, do you know where You ever seen where the bone slicer was maybe yesterday afternoon? I don't know. Actually, let me call him. Maybe beep, boop, beep, boop, beep.
Hey, this is the bone slicer.
Hey, damn it there, bone slicer. Good to see you. How you been? How's the family?
The family is well. Thank you for asking. My daughter died of an illness.
Oh, very good, very good. Were you slicing any bones yesterday afternoon?
No, no. That was 4 days ago.
Oh,
you're in the clear then. You're in the clear. Oh, thank God, missed that paperwork.
Well, furthermore, they knew the skull had been in the swamp for no more than a couple of weeks, as there was still some flesh attached, including the nose, and none of it had been eaten by animals yet. But they also knew that the woman whose skull this had belonged to had been dead for somewhere between 12 and 24 months.
Oh, my goodness.
The bone was covered in a substance called adipocere.
What is that?
Grave wax.
Ooh, what's that?
Well, grave wax builds on bone when the body fat decomposes and mixes with water.
I'm going to have so much grave wax on my body, I can't wait.
Honestly, it sounds like a thing I had at Holman and Fitch in Atlanta. Like, it's we scrape the bones after we've buried them, and it's $14.99.
Oh, wow, that's a deal at any price.
Now, they knew the skull hadn't been in the swamp long enough for all this grave wax to form in that location, so where could the skull have been? Well, it's a pretty good bet that before it was thrown in the swamp, this skull had spent some time in Willie Picton's freezers. We can infer this through two pieces of evidence found on Willie's farm. First, when Willie's farm was finally searched, they found a rib bone that matched the DNA of the skull. So we know this woman, whoever she was, had been killed on the Picton property.
When you say rib bones, I still get hungry.
I want my baby back, baby back, baby back,
baby
back.
That's all I can think about.
Ribs. That's, you know, Michael Myers, the comedian, really ruined that. Mike Myers.
He did.
That was Fat Bastard. That is Austin Powers.
Second, when the freezers in Willie's workshop were searched, they found a further two human heads inside, cut in half exactly the way that Jane Doe's had been cut.
All right, what do you, you're opening up a refrigerator. You got Dahmer or Picton. Which one do you want to open up? What? Which one is more horrifying?
Well, knowing what was found in both, here's the difference is that
Dahmer had meat ready to go.
Dahmer's was in a fridge.
Yes.
Dahmer's was just in a house, like in a house, like in an apartment.
Picton's was in a huge chest freezer.
Okay. So?
So you got to wait for it to defrost, so there's more suspense there.
So, okay. So Picton, so you don't want to open Picton.
Yes.
Okay.
With Picton, as far as I'm concerned, I assume there to be several severed human limbs in one of those big chest freezers.
Right.
So I think that Dahmer would be more surprising, and also kind of the macabre things that Dahmer did with them, like painting the cocks white and like doing all that. And just the cocks, because to me, that's what's really is it's the specificity.
You
of
seem
what
to be
Dahmer
hung up on the cocks.
I'm just saying the cocks. It's all of them. It's all
Detective
the severed cocks.
Sergeant Zabrowski, you're hung up on the cocks, Mr. Zabrowski. Did you find anything else other than the cocks at the Dahmer house?
I opened up the fridge and I saw the bowl of cocks. And the first thing I thought was I saw the little mouths of them go, "Why didn't you save me? Why didn't you save me?" Because cocks are born with mouths.
We've lost them.
Well, those heads were found on the Picton farm in 2002.
Oh, wow.
The Jane Doe was killed somewhere between 1993 and 1994. That means that by the time Willie was finally caught, he'd settled into a nice, comfortable routine that had already been established at least 9 years previous.
And as we know about killers that have their own homes and their own spaces, is that they really do spread out and they get really, really comfortable. And there's a way of doing it every single time. I would now at this point compare him like an Ed Gein, where his whole house kind of became a playland for him. And in Picton's own like weird separate area on the farm, he could do whatever he wanted. And essentially, no one was looking at him because he was the weird brother that was different than his cool Dave-looking brother, Games of Thrones Dave, that was on the other side.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Where is everyone? No one's looking in these freezers, huh?
Willie's, his property was way in the back. And there was another guy who was around those freezers. Remember Pat Casanova?
Of course, Casanova.
Yeah, Pat Casanova was out and about. He was around at the time. Okay. And Pat Casanova is going to come back into the story when we talk about the trial.
Okay. And in Canadian, Casanova is anybody with a penis over 5 inches long.
Wow.
No, we don't know exactly how this skull ended up outside of Picton's property or why it was the only piece of evidence recovered outside of Willie's farm. One of the things we do know is that Willie never disposed of the skulls, hands, or feet with the rest of the body parts at the rendering plant, as all those things are distinctly human and would be recognized should a worker take a peek inside the barrel.
And that's not, and they won't call the police. They just won't render the meat.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Take it somewhere else, Willie.
Take it somewhere else, you funny. This is funny, though. No. We're all laughing because we work at the rendering plant and everything about our whole lives is upside down and bad. But thank you for coming. Thank you for your business. Don't stop coming.
Distinctly human, like loving Frasier. That is a distinctly human thing.
Yes.
Now, the only scenario I can see is Willie was on his way to the plant to dispose of his latest victim's body. He somehow realized he'd left an obvious human body part in one of the barrels, and he picked it up, threw it out the window rather than risk traveling around with it.
So this is sort of, this is a blooper reel for a serial killer.
It is.
This is a blooper. Okay.
So by early 1997, Willie's numbers were approaching 30. Mm. That's when he picked up Sandra Gail Ringwald, one of the few women that we know of that survived a violent encounter with Willie Picton. Mm. Now, a lot of the women on the downtown east side were understandably a little apprehensive of going all the way out to Coquitlam from Vancouver, especially with a rat-faced, pig-shit-smelling weirdo like Willie Picton.
You know what's interesting is that I was trying to, like, scan my mind to try to figure out, like, exactly what Picton smelled like, and I crossed the, over here in my neighborhood, they have dog shit. Garbage cans that are only for dog shit.
Really?
And they just sit in the California sun all day, becoming something else. And as you go past it, it's just like, oh, that's Picton's feet.
Ooh, that is brutal stuff. And I hope no one rummages through those garbage cans.
Why would you?
I don't know. I saw a bunch of people rummaging the other day. I'm just saying, that's not the garbage can to rummage through.
It's only dog shit.
It's got a big poop thing on it.
Yeah. The only guy's going through that is the weirdest, saddest veterinarian scatologist. Like the guy is out there who's just either trying to tell futures from dog shits or is eating them.
Well, I feel bad for the city worker that's got to clean up all the garbage cans that's full of dog dung.
I saw a story this morning from the UK. They have those in the UK, too.
I never heard of this.
Yeah, I saw a story of an old man that said he'd been putting his letters in one of those for months.
Well, why aren't they getting to Marjorie? Hey, Marjorie, did you get my letters?
Marjorie never writes.
Oh, no.
Well, back to the apprehension that women felt about going out to Willie's farm. Willie got around that by offering a rate for their services higher than market value, about $100. Plus, he'd give them free drugs as a bonus. Now, remember, Willie was a millionaire, and he lived in a goddamn trailer, so he had money to spend. Now, for a lot of these women, even $100 wasn't enough to put themselves in the kind of danger one could get into going with a guy like Willie all the way outside of town. But Sandra Ringwald needed money and needed it fast. So she got in the truck and took a 30-minute trip out to the farm. When they walked into Willie's trailer, Sandra made note of the large knife sitting on the kitchen table. Two of them went into Willie's room and had what Sandra called regular sex on Willie's sleeping bag.
Just cut to him wearing a full clown outfit with with a squeaky nose.
Yeah, see if you can fit the tip of my own cock inside of my asshole. Come on, I paid you $100. Pull on the top of it. Oh, I shot came already. Ah, God damn it.
Regular sex.
It said it was about 5 minutes.
Okay.
And he handed her 520s. They got dressed and she figured that was the end of it. Then Sandra asked to use Willie's phone book so she could call up her pimp to tell him she was on her way back to Vancouver with the money she owed him.
Okay. She needed the phone book? First of all, wait a second. So in Canada, pimps have their numbers in a phone book.
No.
Under P for pimp, yes.
No. No, she knew the SRO, the single room occupancy hotel that he lived at. So, but she didn't know the name of the hotel, so she had to look it up in the phone book.
Okay. How do you do that, though? Why would you just randomly get into a fucking van without, I mean, I understand she's in a tough place.
She's in a time crunch. She needs the money fast.
Yeah, she's in a tough place, but she wanted to call up her guy and say, like, hey, I'm on my way back to Vancouver.
Okay.
I got your money. I'll be there in 30 minutes.
All right.
Now, as she was flipping through the pages, she felt Willie walk up behind her. And when she turned around, Willie grabbed her left hand and snapped on a handcuff.
Mm.
But before he could cuff the other wrist, Sandra fought back. She remembered the knife she'd seen earlier, and while she fought off Willie with one hand, kicking away, she reached for the knife with the other. Finally, she got a hold of it and slashed away at Willie, catching his jugular.
Oh, nice.
Fuck.
The next slash went through Willie's cheek into his mouth, cutting out some of his teeth and cutting off a piece of his jawbone in the process.
Oh, no. Not my beautiful face. Not my beautiful face.
All right.
But that didn't stop Willie.
Wow.
He kept advancing on her, and Sandra realized the only way out of the trailer was through him. And she doesn't know how she got outside. She said she totally blacked out.
Hmm.
But the next thing she knew, she and Willie were outside fighting next to his truck. Willie managed to wrestle the knife away, and he stabbed her twice in the abdomen.
Mm.
But,
fuck.
But Willie was getting weak from blood loss and was losing consciousness. So Sandra was able to grab the knife, break free, and run towards the main road with her intestines half hanging out of her body.
Whoa. This is like the shittiest version of the end fight of Wolverine, the new Logan movie.
Yeah. I was thinking kind of Matthew Lillard's character as well from Scream.
Fucking dying here, man.
Dying here, man.
No, once she got to the road, she saw two houses across the street with their porch lights on, but neither answered the door when she was banging on them, screaming someone was trying to kill her.
Hmm.
Finally, a couple in a car showed up, and Sandra flagged them down, covered in blood. And as they were driving away, Sandra pointed towards Willie's farm and said, "If I die, that's where the guy who did this to me lives."
Oh, no way, no way someone did that to you there. I get my ham there. Free ham. You go over there, you just got to move a couple of barrels for him. You get all the handfuls of ham that you get. He does give it to you with his hands. So it's free ham.
This is very similar to the ending of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Wow.
Now, when they got to the hospital, the driver told the police what the woman had said. So they went to Willie's trailer and found him lying there in a pool of his own blood. So they took him to the hospital as well. Now, you'd think this would be one of those classic movie moments where the woman wounds the villain, gets away, gets picked up by a passerby, and the killing spree is over.
Yeah.
But as we know, it did not work out that way at all.
Hmm.
Willie's story was that he had cash out on the table when they got to his trailer. So she saw the cash, she grabbed a knife, and tried to rob him. He fought back in self-defense, and she was stabbed in the process. Now, the police, they actually tried here. At the very beginning, at least. And they charged him with attempted murder. But when the time came for Sandra to testify in court, she didn't show up because she was absolutely terrified of what Willie and Dave might do to her if things didn't go her way.
Oh, my.
It's kind of insane, right? Because they are big businessmen in the area. It's both like they're heavily connected with the mob. And the bikers.
Well, not the mob.
The Hell's Angels.
The Vancouver Hell's Angels.
The Vancouver mob. Oh, yeah. What's all that about?
Oh, yeah. Just beaver pelts on their head and just, like, you know, just do waterboarding guys with syrup and all that bullshit.
Ooh.
It's fun. They keep it stereotypical.
Yes. But they were intimidating. And they Dave scared her enough. And well, I mean, there's no way the sex worker wants to go and testify in court. That's not where they want to be.
No, absolutely not. And Dave had hired a private investigator to follow her. I mean, she knew the reputation of these guys, and she knew that they had money, and she knew that they were powerful. And in fact, like, Willie had hired one of the most expensive regular lawyers in all of Vancouver. So she knew that there was a very distinct possibility that this guy was going to be able to argue self-defense with Willie. And there was a big possibility that he was going to get off, and then she would be fucked.
Mm. Also, possibly that she knew that Robert Picton was intimately involved with the cleaning up of clones for the various cloning centers for the Illuminati, and was being watched remotely by other clones in Buckingham Palace mm-hmm. with Queen Elizabeth. Uh-huh. This all comes from the revelations of Donald Marshall. It is an Illuminati clone whistleblower.
Uh-huh.
And he says that Robert Picton was murdering sex workers, and that what they would do is that when clones go to sleep, you can transfer the consciousness of one clone to another full-bodied clone and then watch it. And that Queen Elizabeth and all of them would sit and watch Robert Picton murdering sex workers and just laugh all night.
It's just that simple, ladies and gentlemen. Open your eyes.
That's it.
That's it.
And Donald Marshall would go on to write the song Lady from Kenny Rogers, because what happened is that Donald Marshall, when he showed up, when they were, so he was picked up.
Now, who is Donald Marshall?
Donald Marshall is the Illuminati clone whistleblower that revealed all this and pulled back the curtain on all this. And
does he have a website that you've been on by any chance?
DonaldMarshall.com, I'm pretty certain is what it's called. I think I have it here. DonaldMarshallRevolution.com.
Oh, okay. And, okay, good.
And what he says is that when he showed up to be what is called a diddle kid, he was 5 years old. He was made as a clone to be shared by all the various members of the Illuminati in Buckingham Palace.
So this man has some deep trauma in his past that he should probably go to a therapist.
He avoided it.
Hash out.
He avoided it because apparently he said when he went to go suck his first dick, he started crying. And the guys said, all the Illuminati were like, this is not sexy. Like, this is Illuminati, like, what can you do? Before we kill you, what can you do? And he began to sing a song. And the first song he sang was the song Lady by Kenny Rogers that they stole from him, and then using a Kenny Rogers clone, made it a number one Billboard hit for 6 weeks in 1980. And then he then wrote several more songs for Madonna. He became known as the Amazing Song Boy. This is true.
I don't
within
know.
Within the Illuminati.
Uh-huh.
And that he, and you know what else he famously penned? The song Chris Benoit by ICP, that I also did not know existed, that ICP did a full Chris Benoit, like, R.I.P. song.
Look at, I'm not sure if it's applicable to the episode, but I think that is very interesting.
Oh, I've been reading about this for about 4 or 5 days.
Oh, good.
So back to Picton. Since Sandra Ringwald did not show up to the trial, the self-defense story held and all charges against Willie were dropped. It would be 4 more years before the killing stopped.
Jeez.
Now, naturally, word of Willie's encounter with Sandra Ringwald spread around the downtown east side pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But luckily for Willie, he had the services of his friend Gina Houston to make sure the flow of girls never stopped. Gina was a working girl con artist who had drifted her way into Willie's life around 1993. She wormed her way into his confidence and was soon telling people they were engaged, even though in the same breath would insist that they had never had sex.
What a lucky... Oh. Why would she make up that they were engaged? Why would... What social currency?
You mean to... Oh, my vagina will never be touched outside of the bonds of marriage. But my asshole, you can do whatever it is you want to it. Because God don't claim the asshole.
What? Yeah. What social currency did this woman gain?
And she
idea. Sometimes referred to herself as Mrs. Picton.
Okay. Well, good for her.
Well, Willie, as far as his relationship with Gina went, he paid her rent and gave her cash, and in exchange, Gina brought him girls from the East Side. Her favorite spot for Willie's dates was the Wish Drop-In Center, located in a church on the corner of Hastings and Gore, the same exact block where we did our live show back in August. Now, Gina would talk to the girls she already knew and tell them she had a friend with plenty of drugs and money who was looking for a party. Only thing was, you had to go out to his farm in Coquitlam to do it. Now, most would say no, as Willie was on the drop-in center's bad date list.
Oh.
But every once in a while, a woman hard up for cash, drugs, or both would agree to go with Gina. And even though Gina claimed she never knew what was going on...
Oh my, of course she did.
When she testified... The cognitive dissonance of this woman is amazing.
Yeah.
When she testified at Willie's trial years later, she said that out of the 49 sex workers on the missing women list that were probable victims of Picton, she had known between 20 and 30 of them.
And she Good gave Lord. Those people, she gave those women, how many do you think she actually gave to Robert Picton?
At least
dozens,
at
probably.
At least a dozen.
Oh, my goodness.
At the very least a dozen, if not more.
Well, look at what happened with Dean Corll and his assistants.
Oh, yeah.
Right? There's a part of it where it's like you kind of get pulled into the morality of it, and you are eventually a part of the validation system where you're there, and the way you're turning a blind eye is also giving Picton check marks to go ahead too.
Yeah.
They're all like in this weird world of like, if we just all kind of pretend like it's not happening and do it kind of automatically, then it doesn't matter, and then you get the perks of being at the Piggy Palace, because a part
guess.
Of it's being like a known quantity in this like place of badasses, like, is kind of fun. Like, you get people that are scared of you. Like, that kind of currency for somebody can actually work out, especially if you are someone that has a lot of street smarts and
yeah.
it was like someone who's out there who's like lived a very tough life. Having people be scared of you is a very enticing thing.
In 1997 alone, Willie's most active year, 14 women went
Jeez.
Missing. And despite this, at the beginning of 1998, a spokesperson for the Vancouver Police Department said, and I quote directly, "There is no indication of a serial killer preying on women."
Oh.
He was also wearing two eye patches, though.
Yes.
And that's it. He had two eye patches on, and he literally had corks in his ears, and his hands had oven mitts on them, so he so it was all distorted.
Yeah, when you said spokesman, I did think like a mascot, like Mr. Met. That's what they should get for the news conferences.
Just a big heroin needle.
Now, that same year, a story was published in the Vancouver Sun about Sarah DeVries.
Okay.
It's either DeVries or DeVries. She became the de facto face of the missing women in Vancouver.
Hmm.
And after the story was published, one of the writers got a call from a man named Bill Hiscox.
That's big. Funny last name there.
Hiscox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Yes. 33 years old I am.
Oh, gosh. Mm.
Now, Hiscox.
Hey, buddy, hey.
What does Hiscox say?
Oh, my
God. Get me out of here.
Oh, my. Who's Mrs. Hercox? Is there a Hercox? Okay.
Wow.
Hiscox said that he had recently worked for a man named Dave Picton.
Oh.
And during the course of his employment, had gotten to know Dave's brother, Willie. Hiscox said,
"He's quite a strange character, eh? Very, very strange."
That's the only descriptor?
That's how everybody described Willie. All these dirtbags are like, "Oh, Willie, he's a weird one."
Yeah, but it's like when people said, "Oh, East Hastings, oh, that's a bit of a bad neighborhood there." They all say the same
yeah.
thing, like, oh, that seems a bit kooky do there what he's doing to the prostitutes slicing their heads open there.
My
oy.
Goodness gracious.
Now, while Bill was on the Picton farm, he'd also had many a conversation with Lisa Yelt, Willie's old hot dog friend that he used to go to magic shows with. Remember?
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had more than once talked about the mountains of women's purses, IDs, and clothes gathering
God.
In Willie's trailer. All this combined with the attempted murder of Sandra Ringwald made Hiscox think maybe there was something up here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, I don't know.
This is what he said.
He's got a farm out in Port Coquitlam, and, you know, he frequents the downtown area all the time for girls. You know what that guy's doing. It's, like, really weird.
He's writing a book called If I Did It. I mean, this
he
is...
He said it. And it's like, I was like, "Oh, did what?" And he's just like, "Oh, you'll see." And I'm like, okay, you know, that's weird. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is you're doing, that's weird. You know what also was crazy weird? That 9/11. Weird. Weird stuff.
So what year is this? Are we in the 90s here?
1998.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay.
The thing was, Hiscox went to the Vancouver Sun only after he'd gone to the Vancouver police.
Okay.
All they told him was that they couldn't just go in there based on assumptions.
Yeah, you can.
You can.
What else do police do?
You can.
But to give them at least a tiny bit of credit, they did put Willie under surveillance. So they did something.
Okay.
Just the guy in a fucking moose costume.
Yeah, exactly. Just two.
I know I could do it. I'm the best undercover cop we have. I could grunt like a moose. I could sniff like a beaver.
But two officers or one moose combined. I want to be the top of the moose now. I want to be the head of the moose. I'm sick
no,
of the back here.
No, no, Sergeant. You're the bottom of the moose until you pass the lieutenant test.
But at this point, most people in the VPD still didn't want to admit a serial killer was responsible for the missing women.
Ugh.
They did know, though, that in 1995, another serial killer had killed three downtown girls whose bodies were found in the woods. Jeez. And they had his DNA. They also had Picton's DNA on file from the Ringwald assault, mm-hmm. so they compared the two. And of course, they didn't match. But since the Vancouver Police Department couldn't imagine there being two separate serial killers operating in Vancouver at the same time, they stopped surveillance on Picton after 2 weeks and turned him loose yet again.
It's just the two cops just abandoned the moose costume like mid-shift. We're like, got the text. All right. Investigation's done. Willie, you go back to being normal. Don't worry about it. Thank you, guys. You guys are the best. You guys are the best around. Man. You got it, Willie.
They could have saved. How many lives could these officers have saved if they were just mildly proactive and wanting to do their job?
15, maybe 19.
Oh, my God.
I think about, at this point, 98, I think he had about 15 more to go.
Jeez. It's just crazy to think about. I was just listening to No Doubt. Wearing JNCO jeans and all of this is that's what the strange thing is when, you know, 1998 was so recent.
Yeah, it was very recent, but it was also long ago, wasn't it, Ben?
It was 20 years ago.
It was 20 years ago.
Yeah,
oh,
20
wow.
years ago.
We are elderly. We are turning into that.
Oh, that's what that is.
It was 20 years ago.
Well, there was one guy who not only thought, but knew almost for certain that there was at least one serial killer in Vancouver all throughout the 90s.
Okay.
That was our man, Kim Rossmo, the profiler we mentioned in the last episode.
Okay.
He'd been telling cops, among many other things, to look for a cluster dump site, meaning whoever was killing these women was probably keeping the bodies, or at least parts of them, right. in one place, which he was.
Yeah. Okay.
But not only did they continue to ignore him, they fired his ass in 1999 without using him once in all the years he languished in their dumb shit backwards police department.
Okay.
And that police department, by the way, it was headed by a man who liked to say he wouldn't even piss on a sex worker if she was on fire.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
It's great. It's so great. Canada is a paradise. That's what everybody says. Canada's.
This is Vancouver. This is very unique. This is not like the great people of Montreal or Calgary. Vancouver is a unique place for Canada.
Well, when they started looking around at all of the different major cities in Canada, which there's like five.
Yeah.
But when they started looking around at all the other major cities, like, they were seeing their missing persons department was pretty small and not very busy, like maybe one or two here and there. Mm-hmm. Like, they'd look at Toronto, they'd look at Calgary, and they're like, oh yeah, we got like two or three missing women, we're looking for them. But then in Vancouver, it's like, but so, oh yeah, how many of you guys got? It's like, oh, about 49.
Yeah, it's quite high.
Yeah, it's really high. And what are you doing about it? Oh, you know, sometimes you just gotta wait.
You gotta wait it out.
Hey, you see this pen I got?
Uh-oh.
You see this pen I got? Sometimes rewards really come to those who wait. You're gonna sit there and you're gonna wait, right? Look at it.
Uh-huh.
49 women are missing.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're not really doing that much about it, but you could just wait a second for it.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you want to get yourself some good pizza, you got to go down to Antico's down in the corner. That's where we go when we ignore the 49 missing women and the work we're supposed to be doing. Just wait for a little bit. This is a slow one. It seems like there's a systemic problem, but basically what we seem to be, it's mostly because we got to what's happened at these cloning centers is wild. You don't understand. Madonna showed up, and that's true. They killed Diana with, do you know Princess Diana? They killed her with the most powerful flash. Oh, there you go. It's tits.
Oh, look at that. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, the Vancouver Missing Persons Department, you know how many people were there?
How many?
One.
Okay.
And you know what he got arrested for in 2005?
What?
Child pornography.
Oh, not good.
Not good.
Not good.
Good Lord.
That was the guy. That was the guy that they had.
Honestly, just remember, they should have seen it coming when you hire a man, Sergeant Christoph Molest.
I suppose.
You can't have a guy named Molest.
Oh, my goodness.
In the police department.
This is horrible stuff.
I mean, even America's Most Wanted was ahead of the Vancouver PD.
Of course. America's Most Wanted was pretty good.
Yeah, they filmed an episode in Vancouver in July of 1999 offering a $100,000 reward for information concerning the missing women case.
Okay.
And by that time, there were plenty of people who could have collected on that reward. One of those people was Andy Bellwood.
Okay.
Andy Bellwood was a petty criminal who had somehow found himself living on the Picton property. And he and Willie became fast friends.
Okay.
See, Willie, once you got to know him, liked to talk.
Because he's Canadian.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's Canadian and they love to talk.
If you were a woman, he liked to tell you about his poor, pitiful childhood and how he was just a plain old simple pig man and so on and so forth.
Yes, and my pig sense allows me to tell inherently different types of grain. I can hear when a pig is crying and I know when to dance for it in order to entertain it. Also, I can tell you where a pig is within 20 yards. But also, I will fuck your pussy.
But if you were a guy, Willie, just like Dave, liked to talk tough.
Uh-oh.
Now, who knows why Willie chose Andy to share his secrets? But one night in February of 1999, the two were hanging out in Willie's trailer when Willie asked Andy if he wanted to go get some hookers.
It's just like it's a hard question. I feel like you and your buddy need to be like really on the same page about sex workers before you just being like the three of us just hanging out, being like, huh. You guys want to go get some hookers? Like in the middle of it, like just yeah. like hanging out and being like, no, no, this is a family reunion, Henry. No. We're yeah. here to be with your family. We're here to like kind of hang out with the cousins. And
well, it's definitely, it comes at peak boredom.
Yeah.
I think you're just staring at someone's face and you're just like, I can't be friends with this guy anymore unless we get some sex workers in here.
Well, Willie suddenly opened up and told Andy just what it was that he liked to do with him.
Mm.
And it wasn't like Willie was drunk. Like we said last episode, Willie was always sober. In fact, the only thing he really drank, the hardest thing he drank, was 7-Up.
Oh, well, that is...
Well, what's wrong with 7-Up? I like 7-Up.
I don't, you know what? I came off the Sprite 7-Up train, right? And I left it, and I went, bye-bye, catch, see you next stop. And then recently I went to have a Sprite again, which I'm going to say is similar to 7-Up.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very sweet.
Very sweet. Well, I think Sprite won the lemon-lime soda game. There's no denying that. Sprite is the victor.
Easily. Yeah.
You guys want to go get some hookers? Or?
No.
No, Willie first pulled out all his tools of the trade. There was a pair of handcuffs under his mattress, a belt, and a piece of piano wire with handles on each end.
Jeez.
He then told Andy he picked up all his victims from the east side, plying them with money and free drugs. And Willie said once they were back at the apartment, he'd have sex with them from behind, bring their arms back slowly, handcuff them, and then strangle the women to death. He even gave Andy a demonstration.
Well,
This is what Andy said.
He got on the bed and he motioned at me as if there was a woman lying there, pretending to stroke her hair, and kind of motioning him with his hand how he would grab her hand and bring it around her back, although there was no woman on the bed. But the power of his pantomime... It was almost like she was there. And I have to say, I don't know if he went to a UCB or a second city, but his object work was impeccable.
Powerful pantomime. Okay, interesting.
Willie then told Andy he'd take the body out to the barn, hang it from a chain, bleed it, gut it, and feed the rest to the pigs.
Hmm.
Anything the pigs didn't eat was sent to the rendering plant. Now, Andy didn't tell a goddamn soul about any of this at first.
But after the story, how do you react? Do you just go, ha, 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 yeah, Willie? Like, you just go, like, wow.
Well, I think you circle it back to the prostitutes. I think you'd be like, oh, where are we going to go? Do something? Or you got to get out of there.
Oh, you know what? Instead of getting hookers, how about we go to a baseball game?
Oh,
and
then
like,
nice.
I tell you what I really do to the baseball players. So we're like, no, Willie. I can't be complicit anymore.
Well, 3 days later, Willie realized that he kind of fucked up and figured he'd better put a little bit of fear into Andy Bellwood. Now, Willie and Dave brought Andy over to Willie's office, accused him of stealing tools, and beat him within an inch of his life. Before Andy left, they made him clean up his own blood off the floor, and he never returned to the Picton farm.
Well, did he steal any tools?
No.
He didn't
steal any tools.
And you also know they do like a Judge Willie thing, like a Judge Judy thing every single time. You know there's pig court where they have people out there, and he's got it. Like they have like pigs as the
pig
jurors
bailiffs.
And stuff, and them talking pig bailiffs and all that shit. You know that, honestly, that they do that.
They
I honestly, though, there's a part of me, because of my Florida training, and I feel like that you maybe understand from Texas and Wisconsin, is that when you're kind of lower income moron, right? A part of the idea of this lifestyle is being badass means everything. Like, people that have this kind of idea of being involved with a criminal organization, and they think it's really fucking cool, and mm-hmm. that what they're doing is really cool, and that everything's totally legit, that's really what Andy was doing. Yeah. Andy was showing up and trying to be an insider, but he thought that it was just like a light inside job. He thought that he'd show up and that maybe they'd go get some sex workers and hang out and do a bunch of drugs, and it'd be like fun criminal lifestyle.
Oh yeah,
until Willie unloaded on him, and then he's like, "Oh shit!"
Yep, they got egos. These guys got egos.
They are huge egos.
Egomaniacs.
I mean, these guys are—they're just bullies.
Yep.
You know, like that's a—you know—bullies always did that shit where they'd blame something on you that you know they know you didn't do it, mm-hmm. but they'd still say you did something to piss them off, and then they'd use that as an excuse to beat the shit out of you.
That's it.
Yeah. And Willie just got his rocks off telling him his story, because that's really what it's about. It's like Willie's just really stupid.
Well, I think that Willie wanted to show off his unbelievable pantomime skills.
Well, that's different.
It was a theater show for one.
Yeah. Then be in a box. Do an invisible Christmas tree. Oh. Show how you're putting ornaments on an invisible Christmas tree. That would be nice.
That is nice. When you have a devastatingly poor family, you can do that with your children. Yes. And you can say, Christmas yes. is real, and it's like there's a tree here.
Just use your imagination, kids. The government is hiding secrets! It's like screaming at my broken family. Oh. Yes, Daddy, yes.
Now, at the same time that Andy was staying at the farm, another lost soul named Lynn Ellingson was staying there as well in a spare bedroom in Willie's house. Hmm. She'd been in the office when Andy was beaten, and it actually didn't seem to bother her all that much. She was just another person's yeah. like, well, yeah, you know, that's the way things go out here on the Picton farm. Andy probably stole the tools, so they were right to beat him.
Okay.
There's a lot of people coming in and out of this
camp. I know, that's what
camp.
I'm surprised about. How is it all happening? I just don't, they're all complicit, obviously.
Yeah, but the longer that Lynn stayed at the farm, the more she started to think something was wrong with Willie.
Yeah.
And since the incident with Sandra Ringwald, rumors have been flying around about how Willie was keeping arms and legs in the freezers. This was 99.
The rumors are going around about arms and legs. This is not a normal rumor. This is something to be investigated.
But also 1999 is when Hit Me Baby One More Time by Britney Spears came out. Also penned by Donald Marshall.
Oh, my God. I don't think Donald Marshall wrote that.
It's true. And Britney Spears went insane because of how many murders her clone was forced to watch in Buckingham Palace with Queen Elizabeth, which is why she shaved her head the way she did.
The media drove her nuts. We did that to Britney.
Well, Lynn had even approached Dave about all these rumors one day, and for her troubles, she got taken into Willie's trailer and was beaten. And Dave told her not to bring it up or talk to anyone about it ever again.
Talk to someone about it immediately.
Now, her suspicions grew even stronger after that, and in March of 1999, they were confirmed in the most horrifying way possible.
Ooh.
One night, Willie and Lynn were cruising New Westminster when Willie commented that he'd like to take a working girl back to the trailer for the night. The two pulled up to a woman and told her they just bought some crack, which they had.
Okay.
And they wanted to know if she wanted to head out to Willie's farm to party.
Mm.
When they got back to the trailer, Lynn and the woman smoked the crack while Willie watched. Now, eventually, Willie and the woman went to his room and Lynn went to hers, where she went to smoke just a little bit more crack.
Yeah.
As you'll do. That is as you do.
It's called a nightcap. It's called a night crack.
A night crack. Okay. All right.
It was then that she heard a noise coming from the barn. She walked outside, and when she opened the doors, she saw legs dangling from the ceiling.
Oof.
She screamed Willie's name, so he walked over, grabbed her by the arm, and made her stand at the end of his slaughtering table. She was absolutely frozen. She said she kept her eyes down, but she saw as Willie tossed intestines and organs into a bucket. The table was covered in blood, and sitting in the middle was a clump of black hair. What we can infer from this, combined with what we know about the skulls found on Willie's property and the Jane Doe at the beginning, is that Willie most likely scalped the women before sawing them in half so as to not get their hair caught in the blade.
And that's the problem with switching from analog to machine, is that just a saw, you don't have to do that, I don't think.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
But I also like how far Marcus went to infer this.
Yes.
As if he thought about it. He sat and he truly thought about with the heads. Like, Carolina's in the other room making dinner, like having a, she's having normal conversation, right. and Marcus just sitting thinking about the hair on the table, and he's like, he scalped it.
Yes.
I'm like, well, what was that? What was that, Marcus? I thought, so you scalped the tickets to see Bruce Springsteen? No, Carolina, no. I made the most wonderful discovery.
Now, as Willie was pulling out more of the woman's insides, Willie told Lynn that if she said a word to anyone about this, she'd be right beside her.
Mm.
She told Willie not to worry, as all she wanted was her dope and booze. So Willie took her back to the trailer, gave her $100 for all of the liquor and drugs she could stand, and sent her on her way in a cab. Lynn left, got plenty of both, and stayed wasted for days.
I actually understand that.
Yeah, I completely understand that. I also think that he found that $100 was like the most money you could give a single person.
I guess so. Yeah, that seemed to be his going rate of just like for anything. Is like if you get one large pizza, here's $100. Like $100. It's very weird.
Now, she said she never went back after that night in early March. But on both March 29th, just a couple weeks later, and May 30th of that year, ambulances were called to Willie's farm because Lynn had overdosed in his trailer. And they were called by Willie.
Okay.
Now, Lynn was also getting payoffs from Willie. Now, this isn't to say that Lynn was a complete and total horrible person. She, like a lot of the other women who came into contact with the Pictons, were absolutely terrified of him.
Yeah.
And their friends. Still, she took thousands of dollars from Willie over the next year or so. And that is where Scott Chubb comes in.
Scott Chubb?
Scott
His
Chubb.
His cock and Chubb coming out.
Honestly, Chubb, it's a massive shame that he did not open a barbecue shack. Because Chubb's Barbecue is an incredible name for a barbecue shack.
Yeah, Frank Underwood would go there. Very fun.
Now, Chubb had been working for the Pictons for years. And one day, Willie offered him a job removing nails from plywood so the Pictons could resell it.
That is a very unique job.
No, not really.
Removing nails from plywood?
Yeah,
that's a job?
Yeah, when you demolish something, yeah, you go out, you got to remove all the nails, and then you can resell all the wood.
At a
discounted price, yes, but you could still resell all of it.
There it is.
Yeah, it's like stripping all the brass piping from a house. Mm-hmm. It's also very interesting to see how far they went to make money.
Yeah.
Like the fact that the business was making money, and it was like they were covering all single elements of like trashy money making that can. Like they were just grabbing shit.
Yeah, I mean they were. Well, that's why they were so rich, because I mean it was all piecemeal. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like a ton of small businesses that added up to, you know, millions of dollars.
Okay. And it's cool if you're a good guy junk dealer. If you're a good guy junk dealer, I think that's cool as shit.
Yeah.
Like between like having like either a pawn store or like one of those things. But something like this is very. It's just. God, they just did everything that was illegal.
The problem with the Pictons is not their business acumen.
No.
It is the murder.
No.
It is, without a doubt, the murdering of dozens and dozens of people.
That is the worst part.
Now, Chubb said while they were doing the job, Willie, out of the blue, offered him $1,000 to kill Lynn Elsington.
Oh, jeez.
All Chubb had to do, Willie said, was to inject her with window washer fluid, and nobody would know the difference between that and an OD. And Chubb, of course, didn't do it, but it does beg the question, why couldn't Willie just do it himself?
Right.
Twice after the incident in the barn, one time just a couple weeks later, Willie called an ambulance to save Lynn's life when he could have easily just let her die.
Right.
Now, it could be that Willie didn't want to be involved in any official capacity with any death whatsoever. You know, even though everyone called Willie an idiot, he was still smart enough to know the cops had put a tail on him the year before.
I swear to God, I look out that back window, and that moose has a radio.
I know it.
Yeah, I mean, Willie wasn't as dumb as everyone said he was. Yeah, he wasn't the smartest person, but he also wasn't as dumb as everyone said he was.
Sort of a Kevin Spacey in Usual Suspects.
I honestly think that you know when you have a tail on you because you're being tailed by the cops and they're making it obvious. A part of what cops do, we saw with John Wayne Gacy, they just show up outside your house and they stare at you. A part of it is they're supposed to be a deterrent to whatever activities that you're doing.
Right.
And then if you really fuck up, then we'll be right here and grab you. But they're supposed to just be watching you and kind of building a whole thing on you, and it's obvious. I think Willie's also a career criminal. Like, you have a whole set of other skills when you're a career criminal. Like, it's like you're someone, he's been doing this forever. He was raised by a criminal family. So a part of it, you don't think that mama fucking Picton was like, cops are bad. Like, how many times they talk about, like, you don't ever be involved with anything. You never call 911 unless you have to. And then you disappear and you let them clean it up and then you come back. Like, it's shit like that.
Maybe he did think about Mama Picton the way that Jason Voorhees thinks about his mother.
Well, Jason Voorhees' mother seemed to be a good person.
What? Did you see the first Friday the 13th?
Yeah, Marcus.
What are you talking about?
Marcus, but
being a revisionist.
That was only after
revisionist.
She went crazy.
After she went crazy.
She murdered, eight children?
Yeah, but that was after they were responsible for the death of her
Technically, her kid couldn't swim. I love Jason, but he sort of made, he died himself. They didn't drown him.
He died himself. But also, Marcus is doing the heritage, not hate version for horror films.
Very good. Interesting.
She was a good person before that.
Okay.
Now, Willie Picton, as far as Lynn Elsington went, he could have even had some twisted sense of affection for her and couldn't bring himself to directly harm one of the women that he, quote-unquote, helped. Because those women that he helped, that's how he justified everything. You know, he could kill these, you know, scum prostitutes, but just so long as he helped the, quote-unquote, good women, then he was still a good person
in
his eyes.
Yeah.
I mean, just kind of the same way that, you know, Ted Bundy would, you know, work at the suicide hotline.
Yep.
You know, they do these weird little things to justify their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But either way.
Also, you let somebody in a certain amount, right? Where if, like, now Lynn knows who you really are. And I think there's a part of it of, like, not many people know every single thing there is to know about me. And so when somebody is there that does know and seems to not be fucking it up, like, you're basically, he's asking Chubb to murder her out of, like, a weird, like, I should probably do this as a criminal. I should probably murder her. But I don't know what to do because technically she hasn't done shit. Like, trying to, like, flip me to the police.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
like
nice to have somebody completely on the inside. Because it gives you something. Look at H.H. Holmes. H.H. Holmes was very similar. Having, like, the people he'd bring the bodies to and all that kind of stuff. It's like, they start to know that he's got something up. And that creates a system of support for you.
And, of course, H.H. Holmes had the friends with Minnie and Nanny.
Yeah.
I'm the one who's Minnie.
Don't you fucking pimp me out.
That seemed like a pretty obvious pimp there.
I don't know. Maybe Terry the Gnome was on the property, or Detective Popcorn was perhaps investigating.
I wonder what Spring-Heeled Jack would think about all this. Well, either way, the fact that Willie offered Chubb money to kill her goes pretty far towards proving that Lynn's story about the barn is true.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, remember, she'd smoked a lot of crack that night.
But I feel like crack could make your memory better.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to mess with this.
You're talking about, so she's, like, hypersensitive to her surroundings?
Yeah, maybe.
But, you know, the Picton boys, they had other problems besides just Lynn Elsington. The Piggy Palace was in trouble.
Oh,
no.
They need the Little Rascals to do a soapbox derby. Soapbox derby.
To raise the money.
They need to get some money, yeah.
Oh, and it's just a bunch of weird Hell's Angels and Canadian backwoodsmen dressed as little kids versus a bunch of real little kids.
Oh, man.
No, it wasn't that business was bad. It was better than ever. In fact, I got an email.
I
heard a rumor that famed Canadian band Nickelback played the Piggy Palace in their early days.
Wow.
You know they're just sitting there just tapping their toes, just banging their head, just being like, these guys are gonna make it.
Great band. Love Nickelback.
You know what? I think these guys, they're gonna ruin rock and roll music forever.
Sure, forever.
I tell you what, you know what you should change your motto is? It's like, you give us a penny, we'll give you a nickel back.
There it
is. That's how you change it and make that money there. I'm fun. I'm Willie. I'm the weird one.
That is kind of fun.
but it was the community at large that was sick of dealing with the constant stream of bikers and lowlifes.
What?
I can't believe it. I know, stunning.
There's no way that they were sick of the gigantic raucous pig farm with screaming filled with drunk Hell's Angels and crackheads next to the rendering plant.
Yeah.
They were just,
I think Nickelback might have been the straw that broke the camel's back. As soon as they heard that band, they're like, no more.
What is this noise?
No more.
The annual New Year's Eve party that they had at the Piggy Palace every year. And the New Year's Eve party, it was huge.
Oh, sure.
Everyone looked forward to the Piggy Palace New Year's Eve party. The New Year's Eve one was raided at the dawn of the millennium by dozens of cops. And afterward, the city of Coquitlam shut down the Good Times Society permanently.
Oh.
But the thing is, even though the police were all gung-ho about raiding the Piggy Palace, they were still dragging their feet on Willie Picton.
Yeah, it seems like they busted the fucking Piggy Palace when you've got 49 missing women in your city.
Oh, no, we're focusing on noise complaints for the past 20 years. We're doing noise complaints.
You know what's nice about the noise complaints is that you can hear where it is.
Yeah.
And you go, and you just stop the noise, because the noise is the crime.
Yeah.
Now, by the year 2000, the stories told by Bill Hiscox, Scott Chubb, and even...
Chubb and Hiscox. We are lawyers. I don't know why they laugh every time. We are lawyers. I got a law degree.
We are lawyers. We are lawyers. We're fighting for justice.
I don't know.
No, the stories told by them and even Lynn Elsington had made their way to police ears.
Yeah.
It would be another 2 years before police would close in on Willie. And even then,
just open the freezer.
And even then, it would be damn near by accident.
Oh my God.
But we'll get into all that and more on the conclusion to our series on Willie Picton.
All right. Well, this is not a great episode for the cops.
No, it is
not a great series for the police. My goodness gracious.
It isn't. And we'll get into the next episode where, you know, there are some people that we got to give credit to that helped to catch Willie Picton. But you're not going to believe what it was that finally got this guy caught.
It is not right. Hopefully, as a society, we are evolving when it comes to treating people equally and with respect.
And the Vancouver Police Department, we got to give them credit as well. After the Willie Picton incident, they did a major overhaul on how they treat sex workers in the downtown east side.
I would hope so.
I think
all
that's
right.
Great. That is really great. But maybe it's also swept out the members of the Vrilya that were a part deeply embedded in the higher echelons of the Vancouver police and the Canadian police, because the problem is they're sitting on a cloning center, or also known as the clone zone,
which is where you show up.
And it's true, because
you know
what
happens, really,
is you
debating having your internet shut off. I'm really worried.
I think we need to move you back to New York.
Come on home, buddy.
Come on home.
I've done a lot of reading, and it sounds like you guys are now a part of the problem, and I'm now the only sane one.
We're the Illuminati.
I'm the only one plugged in to what's really going on, my friend.
I think it's more like, since we live in New York, we don't live like 30 miles from all of our friends, and we're able to like hang out and have social interaction with each other a lot more.
I don't need friends, I have
my stories, I have the truth.
Have you been sitting on your rooftop regularly at the night? This is, I actually like the alien stuff. Have you seen anything in the skies lately?
Yeah, how's MUFON going?
I have yet to note a sky disturbance. I have yet to do it. But I did just look. I'm getting the exam book to be an investigator soon, because I have to pass the exam in order to be able to shadow somebody on a real case.
Does the exam book come with crayons? Or
no, it does not.
And is it like an open book test, or like
do you have to go to a testing facility?
Do you have to go to like a high school cafeteria?
And out of honor, I will take the book and I will put it in the bedroom and I will try to do it without.
That is good. But on a serious,
but the problem is that it's fucking $100 a pop to take the exam.
Oh my God, Henry! I don't think you have They're Willie Picton you. They're just giving them $100.
I mean, you know, you gotta hire a proctor.
I guess yeah, so.
You gotta print the paper off.
I'm gonna have to bring a nun into this house.
Maybe.
I'm gonna have a nun here with a ruler walking around me, making sure I don't cheat on myself.
Yes. Well, your state of California is currently battling a wildfire, so we're thinking about everyone over there. Very underreported, by the way. No one seems to care that California is burning. So for all of our listeners out there, hope everyone's okay.
They care about the stupid fucking NFL, and then the entire media has been owned by whatever advertisement companies that they've used. That essentially they profit off the chaos that the president
creates.
You'll
notice the drumbeat to war. If you pick up on that Comic-Con, as a matter of fact, Northrop Grumman. Well, this is an Able Against Top Hat story, but nonetheless, you can start to see they want us to go to war very soon. The war profiteers are picking up their advertising game. It's all shit. Yep.
Like, remember California, and do not forget about Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico needs help. Awful. Yes, it does. Puerto Rico needs a ton of help. We need to find out what the best charity is to give to. We'll post it on our Twitter, but Puerto Rico is in dire straits right now. So any way you can help out, please do.
All right, let's see here. So we have to talk about, we got on the 28th, we got LA. We're going to be there. I cannot wait for that.
Sold out show, but how do people get tickets if they haven't got them yet, Henry?
So what we're going to do is, if you are in the Los Angeles majority area, you're going to want to go and drop off clothes for part of our hashtag No New Dudes clothing drive leading up to the October 28th show. You go to, we have at the Bearded Lady Mystery Museum in Burbank. It's at the Bigfoot Lodge. Also, I believe in Glendale, and it is at the Hyena Gallery in Burbank. You go, you drop off some of your clothes, you take a picture at the donation box, and you post it on Instagram, hashtag No New Dudes. We're going to pick one random person and give you two tickets to see the show. And it's going to be great. I'm really, really excited. And this show, remember, costume contest.
Yep, that's
it. And it's going to be classy. It's a classy show. We're going to be classy, and we have a good time. There's going to be dancing. I mean, it's going to be a dance that you're going to watch performed to you.
Yeah. There's something about a Zabrowski saying that an event is going to be classy, which makes it innately trashy.
No, it's going to be classy.
Unlimited shrimp. It's going to be classy.
I clean the stoop.
That's it. And let's see. What else do we got? We got the Patreon. Thank you all so much for donating to the Patreon. Yep. You really made this all possible. Hail yourselves. We love you so much.
Thank you so much. If you want to give to our Patreon, go to patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft. Next week, I hope to have, I'm still setting it up right now, but if it happens, then I'm going to be doing an interview next week with possibly do an interview with an actual survivor of Willie Picton.
Okay, awesome.
And that's going to be bonus material on our Patreon. I hope I'm setting it up right now, and I hope I can get that out by next week.
All right.
And I also want to thank, she's already got a hold of us, and she's sent us a lot of information that we got today. She sent us some wonderful reports that she was quoted in. And thank you so much for sending that, Susan. And also thanks to new intern Rachel, who helped out a ton on this episode as well. Thank you so much.
Very cool.
Also, make sure you pick up our new shirt. We have an exclusive shirt. It's only available for another 5 days at represent.com/hailyourself. Pick it up if you can, and it'll be a lot of fun to press it to your chest flesh.
Yes, it's a cozy shirt.
It's very comfortable.
I was wearing it the other day. And keep on supporting all the shows here on the Last Podcast Network. Abe Lincoln's Top Hat for everything political. I listened to our last episode. It's very good.
Good.
I learn a lot.
Oh.
I listen to the episode and I learn a lot. Rate and review that on iTunes. Let's keep on crushing. Wizard and the Bruiser, Sex and Other Human Activities. We have the Spanish show coming out, which I cannot pronounce.
Escuela Sangre.
Escuela Sangre.
Yeah. Escuela Sangre.
Yeah, I think that's going to be coming out this week, I believe.
Awesome. And so just check out all the shows on Last Podcast Network. And if you do have some time to rate and review them on iTunes, that's incredibly helpful. Thank you all so much.
Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Henry Loves You, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel.
Follow us
on Instagram at Dr. Fantasty, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel, the number one. And follow Last Podcast on the Left on all of the bullshits at LP on the Left.
That's it. And I also have to say, October 20th, I was supposed to do a stand-up show in Cleveland, but there was an issue with the venue. They were trying, it all fell apart. No fault of my own, I might add.
Good.
But nonetheless, I will be doing something in Ohio sometime soon. And then on Sunday, I'm in Bay Ridge. So come out for that. That'll be fun. And don't forget to vote November 7th.
It's November 7th?
November 7th.
Can I send it from LA or no?
Yeah.
To vote?
Yeah.
Absentee ballot.
Absentee.
We'll explain to you what that is later.
Yeah, I'll do it. Very good.
All right,
hail
everyone.
Hail Satan.
Hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail Gain.
Hail me.
Magustalation. Magustalations?
Yes, Magustalations. Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the one.